Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
It was lovely to see everyone back in the tent, but I did love Keith the most. It was nice to see Keith again. And he said, who do you think would win? And he goes, it's like asking me to pick who is my favourite child, Josh.
Josh.
I love you, Keith. Love you.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Bakedown Podcast, the last episode in Series 7 for us watching Series 14 of The Bake Off, because we are on the final week, which is very exciting, but of course very sad because it means the end of the podcast. Boo!
I know, sad times.
It's a sad thing. I love doing this podcast.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
And with me, as usual, we have the lovely Jane Beadle, Dan Beasley-Harling, and Howard Middleton. Hi, guys. Hope we're all doing well today. It's final week. Are we all excited?
Yeah.
I am. Sorry.
Yes, we are. We are, Sarah. We are.
You guys are so polite for that first second where you don't want to be the first one to talk. Yeah. And then none of you can stop talking.
It's great. Only that first second, yeah. It's kind of bittersweet because, yeah, it's. I feel like we finally really got to know these finalists and then we're not going to see them next week, which is a bit sad. But yeah, it was. I think it was quite a good final. And I think they sort of, I love that they said, you know, they would make this a more simple affair this year, and I think they really did that. And I particularly loved the showstopper, and I thought the technical was a good old fashioned British one, and the signature was sort of gave them a little bit of leeway because they only had to make 4 of each. So I thought I really really liked the challenges, but I'm really really sad that it's kind of all over now.
Well, me too. And but for the main reason is I'm not going to see you guys every week.
That's the worst part.
Because I just love it. I just love sitting here chatting to you guys. Yeah, it makes me very sad that I'm not going to see you every week. I mean, of course, we could talk to each other every week, but we won't talk to each other every week. But it really cheers my day up, talking to you guys.
It does.
Just goes to show how sad my day is.
Jane, I thought you were going to say, I'm not going to see any of you ever again.
Ever again.
We have classes, ever. Jane. It's okay.
Ever again.
Ever again. Now, before we get talking about the final, we do have to talk about our bake-along classes, which, of course, are also coming to an end this week. But we do have a bit of a spectacular one this week with the lovely Howard, because we are going to be tackling not the signature, not the technical, but both together.
Yeah. Howard, Howard, you little devil.
I know. Yeah.
Wait, you're doing shoe and a lardy cake?
I am. Yeah.
Really?
Oh, I know. Do you know, I am sort of about to have several sleepless nights about it. Yeah, no, I am doing, we're going to do a little pre-video so that the lardy cake can have two proofs. So, and actually,
good idea.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but I'm not using lard either. So it's not really.
What?
I know.
I'm a vegetable.
No, fudge. I'm not actually. So Dan Leopard suggests that white chocolate has the same properties as lard.
Really?
So it's solid at kind of room temperature, and it behaves the same way in a bake. So I'm doing a layered white chocolate and cranberry lardless lardy cake, or hardly lardy cake.
Hardly lardy. I like that.
Yeah.
Like it.
And and then we're going to do some coffee eclairs as well to go with it.
Okay.
Very nice. Mm. Very nice.
Obviously,
I'm interested in the lardy cake, actually, because I used to love a lardy cake.
My mother used to get them from the bakery, and they were my father's favourite. And they are delicious, but they are really heavy, aren't they?
Yeah. It's lovely, actually, because obviously, because you're using white chocolate, you don't need to put sugar in it because it's sweet enough already. Mm. And then the little bit of tang of the cranberry as well in there is nice. And you've got those beautiful layers.
Lardy cake is delicious. Sometimes when you finish a cake, you're like, oh, maybe I can manage a second. But with lardy cake, you're always like, yeah, that's enough. Like, what is it? Like, it's very rich, isn't it?
Peter's had a couple.
Really?
In one go, yeah. Really? Not a couple of lardy cakes. No, just slices.
Okay, all right, okay.
So if you fancy having a go at both the signature and the technical with some coffee eclairs and some white chocolate and cranberry lardy cakes, then come and join me and Howard on Sunday the 3rd of December, where we will be baking both of those challenges. Don't forget, you can sign up from the Bake with a Legend website using the code PODCAST to get 10% off your booking. And if you are signed up to all 10 of the Bake with a Legend bake-along classes, then we will see you there. Howard, I guess that dried fruit and pig fat was probably too hard a push to Americans.
Do you know, I think by the time you've got to the final, you have to accept that actually people are free to use their own flavourings in any case. So I think if you don't like cranberries, put cherries in or something like that. If you don't want to do coffee eclairs, do malted milk eclairs. You know, we can make some variations, but yeah. Pig fat now.
So they do, though. I often, our regular bakers, often in the classes, they'll turn around at the end of the class and I'll say, how did you get on? And they'll say, oh, well, good, but I changed all the ingredients. Yeah, I did different flavours. I'm like, I think fair play. No, but I think, you know, if we can get people really confident to make their own changes in the recipes, I think that's amazing.
Absolutely.
I think that's mission achieved. Yeah.
Absolutely.
To be fair,
pig fat and dried fruit is probably a hard push for a lot of British people as well. So fair call, Howard.
People my age and over can cope with it, but maybe the younger crowd not so much. I don't know.
Well, we hope to see you for that class. And don't forget, we have lots of fantastic Christmas classes coming up. If you want to make a mini Stollen and some Lebkuchen with Howard or his fantastic Partridge in a Pear Pie centrepiece.
That's a beauty, Howard.
It is a beauty. Yeah. You can come and join Howard's classes. Jane is making her fantastic sausage wreath, which is absolutely beautiful, like a sausage roll, but huge. Or a chestnut and walnut roulade, which is a brand new one this year. And Dan is going back to his classics, absolute classics, which are absolutely fantastic, definitely going to sell out, his Bûche de Noël and Kranzekaka stacking Christmas tree. So we do have something, whatever you want to bake at Christmas, come along and join either Jane, Howard or Dan for their Christmas classes. And don't forget to have a look on the Bake with a Legend website for other classes we have coming up in January and into February as well. But let's carry on with the final of this year's Bake Off, and let's start off with the Signature Challenge. So the Signature Challenge this year was 8 highly decorated eclairs. And as Dan, you said earlier, they didn't have to make that many, did they? They just had to make 8 in total of 2 different types in terms of decoration and flavour. So we had some really nice flavours, lots of fruits and chocolates in there. Very, very nice. Jane, what did you think of this challenge?
Yeah, I thought it was a good challenge, actually, for a signature. I think we've said plenty of times in the past that to be on Bake Off, you've really got to make good choux.
Well, you've said it. You say it every time, Jane.
I do.
Every time, Jane. Yeah. You can't make shoe. Don't come on, Bake Off.
That is true. You've got to make shoe. So I thought it was a really, really good challenge to start with. I don't always dust mine with icing sugar, though.
No, I thought that.
You know, I think the voiceover was saying you have to dust them with icing sugar to get them crisp. You really don't. You just have to bake them for long enough, really.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like Nigella says, if your roast potatoes aren't crisp, bake them for longer. It's the same with eclairs. If it's not crisp, keep baking them.
And if you take them out after they've set and they go a little bit soft, shove them back in the oven. I mean, you just, it's not rocket science. And Paul said something that wound me up as well.
Just this week?
Because they said, you've got to fill them with this, that, and the other. And he said, if you overfill them with creamy ingredients, they're going to go soft. Well, you have to fill them to the brim to make them nice. So what is this overfilling business?
Whatever, Paul.
You can't make your custard any less wet. Custard is custard. Anyway, all that aside, and I'm just nitpicking, I thought it was a good challenge, actually. Just surprised me. They only had to make four of each. Six of each, at least. You know, make a dozen. You know, four of each. Maybe they were just being kind. The start of the thing, but I thought it was a nice challenge. I think gave you room for creativity, and they seem to be going for these nice basic bakes that you've then got to decorate to your heart's content, and perhaps a little bit over the top sometimes. But no, great challenge, lovely flavours. Dan had a new haircut. My goodness, I thought it looked very, very short, his hair. But I love the final, because you get all the family heartwarming stories and meet their family. And just, lovely, lovely challenge. I do love an eclair.
I have to say, I really loved when they brought, it was lovely to see everyone back in the tent, but I did love Keith the most. It was nice to see Keith again. And they said, who do you think would win? And he goes, it's like asking me to pick who is my favourite child, Josh. I love the Keith.
That was such a good moment. I think I genuinely was watching it, just went, ha! It was just brilliant. Keith.
We mustn't forget he's got comic timing, because he did stand up. Let us not do that.
Yeah. He did.
So that was,
It was beautiful. Shout out to Saku as well. I thought, I think it's definitely going to be either Josh, Dan, or Matty. Yeah. Well done, darling. Absolutely, Saku. Oh, I've missed those.
But I did like the signature. One thing I did think, though, I kind of agree with you, Jane, that, you know, why only four? Because the thing is, if you make bad shoe, I mean, yes, we all make, when we make eclairs, there's always a few ugly ones on there. That's inevitable. But when you make a batch of shoe, either the batch is good or the batch is not. It's that, you know, it's not like you would magically get like four that were nice and the rest were all collapsed, soggy messes. That doesn't happen. So, it was a bit weird. Maybe just to cut down the decorating time, 2 hours and 15 minutes, not a lot of time. Could you make, that's basically a class for us, isn't it? So it would be like making eclairs in a class. Well, yeah, that's totally doable, surely.
Completely doable. I mean, completely. In the caramel class that I do, we make two different types of caramel. We do caramel, hazelnut spikes, and we make the shoe. And that's with people long distance, let's face it. Zoom classes do take longer to make something. So, yeah, totally doable in the time. Totally.
Yeah. What did we think of Matty's cherries, though? Because I thought Paul was a little bit harsh, wasn't he? What was the word he used? The cherries on top look ridiculous.
Ridiculous.
I was like, wow. That's brutal.
I don't really know why.
I think he'd not made it. He couldn't decide whether he was turning them one way or the other. There wasn't consistency in the way that
he played
them.
The ridiculousness of that.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
They looked a bit messy. He could
messy
have
was the better
a
word.
A bit messy is one thing. Yeah. Ridiculous is another.
Yeah. No. If I was going to put a cherry on top of something, I'd use a whole cherry. Or, you know, I wouldn't use like bits of a cherry. So I kind of get what you mean, but I just thought Paul was being a little bit harsh this week. But then, well, that's Paul, isn't it? And I suppose it is the final. I suppose we could maybe let Paul be a bit harsh this week. What do you think?
I think we can be a little bit. Do we want constructive? A little bit constructive criticism, maybe.
No, destructive. No, now we're in the final.
you can't send them away as losers having destroyed them by saying their bakes are ridiculous. You can't do that at all. Everybody's got to have done well, but some people have got to have done slightly better. I think it's like your children again.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got to be sort of kind.
I was surprised that only Josh did a Crackerland, though. Ooh, I mean, I'm a huge Crackerland fan, but like, it's such a safe way to control Shu. I'm surprised more of them didn't do that. Mm. But then it does seem like from this final, I think we really did truly appreciate how inexperienced Matty is. I think, you know, week one, we all kind of pegged him as an early out because he seemed to lack a little bit of buttercream knowledge or whatever, but he's obviously made it all the way to the final. He's obviously a fantastic baker, but you know, he sort of said, oh, I've avoided Shu forever. This is the first time I've made it this week or something, didn't he?
Avoided it like the plague, phrase. He obviously doesn't listen to the podcast because I
clearly not.
Matty, come and join Howard's Shu class next.
He won't be busy. He'll have nothing to do.
Not at all.
He taught himself online, didn't he? You wouldn't believe how many online videos I've watched of this.
And yes,
he
did.
I thought he did a very good job. I mean, he's a quick learner, is Matty?
He really is. He really is. Now, these were Matty's Black Forest and Banoffee eclairs with ridiculous cherries on top, apparently. The Kirsch ones, the Black Forest ones, apparently they found one that was nice and firm because I think they were a little concerned about slightly soggy shoe. Needed a bit more cherry, I think they said, but good chocolate and alcohol levels. And the Banoffee ones, good solid with the banana flavour, but needed more caramel. But I think that's a really good praise from the judges there, because Paul especially has often been very down on people making banoffee because he's like, oh, the banana isn't authentic, it's an artificial banana, and then when they do use real banana, it's not strong enough. So he did really well there to get a good banana flavor.
Did he put any sort of cherry gel in the Black Forest ones? Because that would have been nice if he'd put not just put cherries on the top. How did he get his cherries in there?
I think he blitzed a cherry jam, didn't he?
Oh, did he?
I imagine that?
Yeah, I didn't.
I think so.
That would have been good. Actually, I love the idea of that. I think that's very nice with the cherries cutting through the cream. I thought they were lovely ideas. I'm not sure that I would have bothered with walnut and pecan praline.
No, I don't think you need both.
I would have done one nut. I wouldn't have done two. And I would have probably gone for pecan just because I love pecan and banana.
Hazelnut. I'm such a traditionalist. I just go for the classic stuff.
Hazelnut and banana.
Also with eclairs, and Howard, you'll be
not that I'm questioning your flavours.
No, no, no. Howard, you'll be very relieved to hear that I give you my seal of approval. But according to some French person I once spoke to, eclairs are traditionally it's sort of three acceptable flavours: vanilla, chocolate, and coffee. Those are kind of like the three sort of classic acceptable flavours, and I like traditional. I love a vanilla eclair. You know, I love vanilla. You know, I love it very much. But I don't think that would cut it on Bake Off, would it? I think you get in trouble for just doing a vanilla eclair.
It depends how much time we've got in the class. They might end up just being vanilla eclairs if we've not got time. Shove it in. We've run out of time.
Yeah, but you can't beat it, can you? Nice crisp shoe. Good chocolate ganache on the top with a wonderfully flavoured chantilly inside.
Mm.
Classic.
Oh, no. Creme diplomat for me. Creme diplomat for me. Oh, lovely.
I don't think they would have had time with a creme diplomat, would they? I don't know. They might have done.
No.
As long as you're not putting in a creme, what's the one you like? Mousseline.
No, not creme brulee. That'd be too greasy. That would be too greasy. Because the eclair isn't sweet enough to
match. Oh, just whipped cream.
Yeah, whipped cream.
Just whipped cream.
Can I be really controversial?
Yeah.
No, you can't. No.
Okay.
What?
Okay.
Go on. No, go on. Say.
Ignore
him. I hate eclairs.
Oh, no.
No.
I hate them. I think I've just had really, really bad eclairs.
Get rid of her.
I know. Bye, guys. It's been fun. Thanks, guys. I don't like shoe. I think I don't see the point of it. It tastes of
nothing. Cardboard?
Yeah.
It's like cardboard. But you've got really cheap cream in the middle that's like, you know, squirty cream out of a can.
Oh, no,
and then like the fake chocolate topping. I think I've just had really bad eclairs.
I think so. And I think the point is that ideally they're best when they're fresh, aren't they? So if they've been sitting in a box in M&S or whatever, that shoe's got softer and softer, and it's not as yeah, you want to fill them and eat them quite quickly, really.
You do. Unless they put crackerland on the top, when you still retain that crunch. I do love crackerland. I think whoever came up with that idea is genius.
It wasn't me, unfortunately.
I thought it was. I thought Jane invented Bakewell tarts and you invented crackerland. Yeah.
Maybe I did. Maybe I misremembered. But one tip I will give you about eclairs, they're absolutely best fresh. But if you do want to make them a little bit in advance, don't put them in a sealed container because the moisture will equalize and they will get soggy incredibly quickly. I leave them uncovered in my fridge, but obviously make sure you haven't got any like smoked fish in there or something because they'll end up stinking of smoked fish, you know, like, so just be careful what else is in the fridge.
Nice, but mackerel eclairs, lovely.
vanilla and mackerel. But if you leave them exposed to the air in the fridge, they will last for about 12 hours okay, like pretty much okay. So, yeah, but don't put them in a box because that will be the death of them. They'll just be a pile of mush when you come back to them. I mean, if it's a stack of profiteroles, I might not mind if it's all a bit mushy, but, you know, not an eclair because you want to pick it up, don't you?
You do, without it going bending over.
Well, maybe one day I shall make some eclairs and I can have proper fresh nice ones rather than the horrible ones.
You've sat through enough shoe classes.
Goodness, I have, to be fair. I have.
But going back to the mackerel and vanilla, I thought that could have possibly been one of Dan's flavours.
Yeah.
Along with his Thai green curry. But no, he didn't. He went very safe with his flavours this week, I thought.
He did. So we had the strawberries and cream with a summer fruit punch jelly, and a salted caramel, mascarpone cream and praline and ganache and tempered chocolate decorations and all sorts of lovely things on there. I believe that the strawberry ones are a bit messy, they said. And the chocolate ones are a bit soggy. Mm. And the transfer was too big for the chocolate one. It sort of rolled over a bit.
You know, eclairs are kind of rounded at the ends, and he'd put a rectangle on the top. It didn't really make any sense. You can get eclair shaped cutters, can't you, that cut out the fondant or chocolate or whatever, an eclair shape, but that would have been far more appropriate. It's one of those weird things that seems good at the time, but then looking back, we've all done it on Bake Off, haven't we? Where you look back and you're like, I don't know why I thought that was a good idea. But I think he will be looking back at that thinking, what? You know,
but I think, you know, a big thing on top of an eclair is not necessarily attractive. He could have cut some half circles or something and then interspersed it with pipe bits of cream. Yeah, so a big thing you just shove on top. I mean, it was Richard Burr was the first time I'd ever seen that chocolate transfer, and he used it to great effect on one of his bakes in whatever series it was, series 5. Nancy's. And it looked very effective in that, and it didn't look very effective for Dan this week, sadly.
No, I was surprised they're allowed to use those, actually, because I think when I did the chocolate collar challenge, they were like, I'm like, can I use a transfer? And they were like, no, obviously not. But maybe that's because it was, you know, there was a chocolate collar challenge. But I was surprised because we're not allowed to bring sprinkles or anything. That's one of the things that people ask us, like, why are there no sprinkles on Bake Off? And I'm like, well, because you're not allowed to bring pre-prepared decorations. So I'm surprised that was allowed. Are you surprised?
Yeah, I suppose so, put like that. But they're quite tough on us with lots and lots and lots of things, aren't they? We weren't allowed to use shop-bought fondant if we were going to use fondant. We had to make our own.
Ezra, was that his name? He bought shop-bought fondant.
Yeah, but our Christmas special, both Andrew and I made our fondant because we thought we're not allowed to use shop-bought fondant. And the other two both used shop-bought fondant. So I mean,
Scandalo.
I know, maybe the rules have changed over the years.
It didn't help them win, though, did it? So.
No.
No, it didn't, Howard. No, it didn't. I should go and get my plate.
You're feeling feisty this morning.
It is.
Howard, what did you think about the amount of cream that Dan put on his eclairs and the amount of decoration generally? Do you think eclairs should be a bit more simple, a bit like the financiers we were talking about last week?
It depends how much time we've got. Yeah, it's no. I think you do. You tend to want to see, like Dan was saying, you want to see the shape of the eclair, don't you? So if you start putting too much decoration on top, you actually detract from that. So a little bit, you know, with a couple of coffee beans or a couple of lines of chocolate or something like that to add a bit of design to it, it's absolutely fine. But if you start piling too many things on top, well, there was a point like a few minutes ago, and I was wondering whether I could put a lardy cake on top of an eclair, and I thought, no, don't do it.
Too much.
Okay.
That's where we're drawing the line. Good to know. Love that we have a line to draw. Well, let's also talk about Josh's as well, because he did very well in the Eclair Challenge. He had a coconut mango raspberry one, and then he had a coffee one, which clearly Dan approves of, because it's in the holy trinity of Eclair flavours, so that's good. A coffee creme pat, a coffee icing, and a chocolate craquelin. They looked pretty uniform as well. They liked the look of them, the judges. They were perfectly filled.
They looked amazing.
The fruity one was delicate flavour, but very delicious. I think Paul wanted a bit of sharpness coming through, but they loved the coffee ones. Perfect flavour balances. So only a couple of negative comments there for Josh.
Yeah, really good. I just want to, I'm not accusing Josh of any kind of plagiarism, of course, but there's a wonderful, surprisingly specialist shoe bakery in London, and I'm assuming it's in other places as well, called Maitre Shoe, and they basically just sell eclairs and profiterole adjacent looking things. And I'm not saying he copied one of the designs, but they have that. They have a simple glaze on top with some lines up and down and a little bit of decor, and it's like a very classic look that they do, and I think that's beautiful. And maybe he was on Pinterest or saw it, I don't know. But that's a very classic, beautiful design. I thought that was amazing. That's exactly what I would have done. Which makes it obviously the correct answer, right?
And he made them long and thin as well.
Yeah,
like they would have looked like plagiarism all the way.
No, but I thought they were lovely. They were beautiful. I think Paul was probably right. You know, you do need sharpness to balance the sweetness, and obviously none of us tasted them. But I think that was probably a very fair criticism, wouldn't you say, Howard?
Yeah, I think so. I think when you're looking at flavours like coconut, mango, you sort of think a little bit of lime or some passion fruit or something, just to give it a bit of a tang, I think.
Well, didn't he have raspberry in there? Mango raspberry?
He did.
Yeah, but
raspberry would give it tang.
It's not as sharp as like a lime or something. You remember, Jane, you put the lime in the coconut. Do you not remember?
Mixed it all up.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Harry Nilsson, the late, great Harry Nilsson.
Sarah, do you know what we're talking about?
I do. Thank you. Or if you're Homer Simpson, you put the beer in the coconut and throw the can away. Speaking of fruit, we have had a couple of comments from our lovely listeners that I just wanted to address with you guys. Paul and Prue have said in a couple of episodes over this season that when people have used blueberries and they've bitten into it and they've said, blueberries don't taste of anything. And a lot of people have been a bit sort of shaken by this, especially a couple of people have written in from the States saying, what are you talking about? Blueberries are gorgeous and they really do taste of something.
They're passionate, yeah.
Can we address this? Because I always thought that blueberries definitely have a taste. I mean, yes, all right, they might be a little bit subtle and you need quite a few of them to get a big flavour, but blueberries definitely do taste of something, right?
Yeah, but it has to balance. It has to come to the fore, as they say, and it struggles. And if you're competing with something like lemon, which is often paired with, you often don't really taste it. Jane, you look perturbed.
No, I agree with you absolutely, Dan. I don't say that very often. I think blueberries are a bit like cherries in a way, in that cherries are lovely to eat, aren't they? And blueberries are lovely to eat on their own. But if you cook them down, they're not particularly strong flavour. So Morellos for cherries are great, but I do think you have to oomph them up a little bit. And I think the beauty of cherries and blueberries are the shape and the burst as you cut into them. You know, if you put cherries in a cake or blueberry and lemon, and you get a whole blueberry and it goes when you go into it, lovely. I don't think they're madly strong on flavour like a good raspberry or lemon or lime. They haven't got that intensity, I don't think.
I mean, I love a blueberry muffin. Blueberry muffin.
I love a blueberry muffin too.
But that's the start.
But that's because it's got a whole piece of fruit in it. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. And there's nothing else, is there? It's just sugar and blueberries, really. And it's healthy because it's fruit, right?
Yeah,
so you want to be five a day. Absolutely. Yeah.
Five muffins a day. That's my wheelhouse.
I did see on Instagram, actually, there's a very lovely lady whose name I can't pronounce, who has got a massive following on Instagram, and she made blueberry buns, like cinnamon buns, but with this blueberry filling, and she cooked down loads and loads of blueberries, and it was a lot of blueberry in the rolled up bread, which looked fab. And then she kept some of the juice and made her cream cheese frosting with blueberry in. And that did look very nice. I think if you want blueberry to be the real star of the show, you have to use an awful lot of blueberry in order to.
Yeah. So possibly just a slight over-exaggeration from the judges, because blueberry can be overwhelmed easily.
Yeah.
You know, we have to make it taste of blueberry if you're going to use blueberry. Okay.
It's also like strawberries and tomatoes, though, isn't it? Sometimes you'll get them, and if they're in season, they have a much stronger flavour than when they're kind of out of season. So
yeah, don't buy strawberries in the winter, people. They are worthless. Yeah.
And especially for those of you in the States, you know, if you've got really, somebody's written in, apologies if I can't remember the name. Somebody's written in and say that they've spent all their childhood in the blueberry growing region in the States and picks them every year, and they're always beautiful and delicious. I'm sure they're much nicer than the ones we have. So
probably.
Right. So that was our signature challenge. I get quite nervous in the final because I know everything rides on this, so I barely make any notes because I'm just so watching the final. So in our signature challenge there, we have Josh maybe slightly ahead, Matty in the middle, and Dan ever so slightly behind. But again, we don't know what's going to happen in the other two challenges, and it is anybody's game. And we do
have... We already watched it.
Yeah,
all right. Sorry, Sarah.
Oh,
sorry.
Goodness, I'm going to miss you, Dan.
I was building tension for the listeners.
Sorry, Sarah, I'm sorry.
Oh, we're not having Dan back next year.
No,
way too interrupting.
Right. No,
goodness
not.
Me.
No,
but all three of them seem to be pretty reasonably matched. They've all had Star Baker. I'm just looking at my notes. They've all had Star Baker twice. Mm-hmm. They've all had one handshake, and only Matty hasn't had a technical win. But they're pretty well matched.
I thought it was fascinating that they brought that up. I thought it was going to be some lovely foreshadowing.
Yeah.
And then. Yeah, sometimes when they raise things, you're like, this is obviously building to something. No. All right, fair enough.
Our technical challenge, as we have said, was lardy cake, but this was lardy cake slices, which I don't know if that makes it better or worse. We had to do 9 lardy cake slices. Now, for those of you who are not familiar with lardy cake, it is this challenge was laminated dough, incorporating soaked fruit, soaked dried fruit, so raisins, things like that, and candied peel. And as the name suggests, spread with lard throughout. Dan and Jane, you've both said that you've had lardy cakes a lot. Howard, have you had lardy cakes a lot before?
No. I've never had lardy. Well, I've had the my version of it, which is very nice.
Yeah.
But I did have, what are those things that you get in Mallorca? They have those, I think they're called ensamadas, and they're very similar to a lardy cake in that they are lard. Oh, and we had them for breakfast once, and I couldn't eat them. I just thought, oh, these taste really, really lardy. Yeah.
Rich. Yeah. So when I was a kid and I had lardy cake, and I don't know if it was just one specific bakery, but it was quite a deep cake that you would have a little wedge of. I don't know if that's traditional or not.
Yes.
It is.
Yes.
Okay, fine.
It's much more traditional than that.
Yeah, I never had the slices, so I don't know if there's a different way that they're being made. I guess they just didn't have enough time to prove/bake the traditional lardy cake.
There's a couple of ways of doing it. So basically, it is still a kind of bread dough, and it's still layered with lard and with sugar and fruit. But you can either roll it up so that it's almost like a really big kind of Chelsea bun or something like that.
Yeah.
And then it will rise up into more of a kind of domed cake which you can cut a slice of. But it will still have the kind of layers in between. Or you can do like you would with puff pastry and fold it into a square, and then you can cut slices of it, sort of rectangular slices.
Sorry if this is like spoilers for your class, but like, do you do it like a rough puff, like with chunks of fat in, or do you like spread a whole even layer? What do you do?
Spread a whole even layer. So literally, what I do is melt the chocolate and then do like you would a kind of envelope fold, encasing the chocolate and the fruit, roll it out, and then repeat. So,
because Matty had no idea, bless him, did he? I loved what he was doing, trying to get the fat in. It was just like he was massaging it. It was wonderful. I don't know. Don't know what that was about. Noel enjoyed it though.
I'm just looking at your ensaimadas. It's very, very similar, isn't it?
Mm.
It doesn't look as though it has got as much fruit in it.
No.
It doesn't look as though it's got fruit in it at all, actually, in the ones that I'm looking at. And it's a common cuisine eaten in southwestern Europe, Latin America, and the Philippines, apparently. There you go.
Apparently the Philippines use butter, though, which...
They might do.
Then it's no longer a lardy cake, really, is it?
But
then
it's no longer a lardy cake when you use white chocolate either, Howard.
Sorry, Jane.
I'll just get wrecked, Howard. Yeah.
Okay, so at this point, it looks like only Jane is coming back for next year's podcast. Yeah.
Cool. Well, I just thought it was quite a nice challenge. But again, 3 hours struggling with proving, I think, as Paul was saying. Well, if you only give them 3 hours and a hefty bake, because that dough is going to really struggle to get up with a load of lard and fruit in it, isn't it? They are going to be struggling with proving. I think it goes back again to give them a bit more time if you want a decent bake on some of these enriched doughs.
And there was quite a variety of results, wasn't there? Often, as viewers, we can't really see the differences between them, but we could definitely see the differences this time. So that was quite satisfying to watch.
Did they didn't have to make their mixed peel, did they? Were they given mixed peel? Because at some point... They had to make it. Oh, good.
Yeah, because the recipe talked about, the method talked about washing it or boiling it in fresh water and then boiling it in a sugar syrup.
Oh, yeah, because when we do our quick and easy one, when we do, I can't remember what Christmas recipe that we're not doing this year, in the past, we make some mixed peel, but we literally just cook it down in a sugar syrup for speed, don't we?
It depends on the fruit. If you're using like an orange that's not that bitter, then it's absolutely fine. But like if you're using like a lemon, you have to
do that.
Because it's too bitter. It's too too unpleasant. But I think they were using orange, weren't they? I wasn't really paying attention. Yeah. Was it orange?
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Okay.
Now, Dan's final technical, obviously, when he brought it out and presented it, was very, very dark.
That's
and
generous.
I noticed that he did. I think King Alfred was the phrase they used to describe it. Oops.
People might not know what King Alfred meant. So,
it's a reference to I don't know if it actually happened or if it's just a story. King Alfred, who it was something like his castle was invaded and he had to escape, and he hauled up somewhere with a peasant woman, and they were grilling some cakes on the fire. And she said, right, just watch these for a sec. I'm going to nip out and do whatever. and he was so preoccupied with his battle plans, he forgot to watch the griddle cakes, so he ended up really, really burning them. And it's not actually as exciting story as you think.
No, but that's
especially the way I tell it. Wow.
I thought you got distracted by the servant woman.
I wasn't there. No, he didn't. I wasn't there. That's how the story goes.
It's not an exciting story. However, it does explain the comment.
It's one of those curious stories that you're like, why do people repeat this story? It's not an interesting one. I've also burned cakes. No one's going to be telling that
story. Why is King Alfred so special? We all burned.
But you weren't running away from the Vikings. I believe he was running away from the Vikings.
Yeah, there was a context. All right, fine.
This being the core difference. So what happened with Dan's? Because he did turn the oven up for the last little bit. Well, yes, I know that. But he did turn the oven up. So was it that?
I don't know what. It was one of those rare occasions where we actually got a little shot of the recipe. And it said at the top, 180 degrees, circle therm.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he said, I'm going to bake this at 200. And then he turned it up to 220. So it's like,
burnt it.
I think that might be the reason. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Cranking up the oven hotter isn't always the answer. No. It can make things worse. And circle therm is fan.
Yeah.
It's a fan setting or convection setting for those particular brand of oven. They have a weird name for it. So it would have been like 200 normal, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah, 200 non-fan, yeah.
Yeah. He put it, I didn't notice that he put it to 220, but yeah, that would have been a mistake. That would have done it.
But can I just say for Dan, everybody else put cling film over their bowls, and he put a tea towel. He didn't use cling film. Exactly what I've written. Yay!
So the technical challenge then, Dan didn't actually come third with his rather overbaked lardy cakes. It was Matty that came third, bless him. His was underbaked. It needed more proving. It hadn't been laminated properly. I think he just really, really struggled with that one, and he was third. Dan was second, very dark and overbaked and uneven layers and a bit dry as well, which I'd expect with something that dark. But Josh came first. He got 9 squares, apparently, was one of the comments. So good for Josh. Well done. It was very light, good lamination, good flavour and very good mixed peel. So heading into the showstopper, it looks like Dan and Matty have swapped over from being second and third to third and second, and Josh slightly pulling ahead with first. Matty was definitely a bit disappointed going into the showstopper, but as we've seen before, the showstopper can change everything around, so it's still all to play for.
Yes, I loved Matty saying, if I hadn't had such a good signature, I'd be quite despondent. And then it cuts to him on a chair looking despondent. Yeah. So that was quite a nice cut. But it was pretty raw. And when he served it, I had visions of Gordon Ramsay going, it's raw! Raw! it's not that show. It's not that kind of show, though. But it's just, that's what went through my head anyway.
Well, now it is time for our questions segment. Thank you, a massive, massive thank you to everybody who have all sent in questions. We've been flooded with questions, which we absolutely love. And I'm really sorry we don't have time to answer them all, but we do have a couple of questions here. Now, these are all slightly sort of like behind the scenes technical questions, which I'm very interested to hear what you guys have to say about this, having been on the show yourselves, obviously. Now, this is from Cindy from Chicago. So hello, Cindy, who says, is there a pattern to assigning which baker uses which bench since they change each week, or is it determined randomly? And what about you three? Did you prefer to be at the front or the back?
I'm sure there's a reason, okay? But we certainly don't get to pick. They certainly don't tell us. They just tell you where you're going. On my season, they kept putting me next to Ruby. And I assume that was because we had some quite good sort of back and forth. So I think they wanted to keep that going. You know what I mean? No, I don't remember hearing ever any rhyme or reason, Howard.
No, I think they do tend to move you around, don't they? So I don't think you're certainly not in the same place 2 weeks running. You might end up in the same spot more than 1 week, but I think there's a difference as well this year, as far as I can remember, in the, did it look in the final as if there were actually more benches there? Mm. So sort of six or something. Normally there's either the same number of benches as speakers.
Of course, I've noticed.
Or probably one more if it's an odd number. But I thought that...
we definitely had more benches, you know?
Did you? Because
I remember... Jane knows. She was in the final.
Oh, yeah, you were in the final. Yeah. Did you have more than four?
I was.
Yeah.
we did, because we had so many things to bake in our final. And I remember using the bench behind. And I think we all had a bench that we could use. We weren't allowed to use the other oven, but we were allowed to use the bench for laying stuff out. So I don't think there were 12, but we definitely had a bench behind us. Or I did anyway. I was at the back for the final.
Did you ever feel there was any rhyme or reason to where you were being placed,
Jo? No, none at all. No. It just seemed to change week on week. There was 1 week that I had a horrible cold, and I asked if I could be on a bench with a sink so I could wash my hands frequently. Because I'm blowing my nose and coughing and spluttering. But no, I think you just got moved around. Some weeks you were at the front, some, you know, it didn't seem to make any difference. I couldn't work out what the difference was.
I was near the front quite a lot during my season, but that's probably just because I'm so pretty.
Yeah.
Whatever you say, Dad.
I must have got ugly between week one and week two. I was at the front week one.
And they shoved
at the back for the rest.
We've had enough of this guy.
Yeah.
Well, I started at the back. Oh, no, I didn't. I wasn't quite at the back. No.
But actually, I don't like being at the front because then you can't cheat in the technical.
Ah, you see.
Yeah.
Alvin and Jane, back or the front? What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's better to be able to see somebody in front of you. Yeah. Yeah.
You're right at the front. It's horrible, because you're looking at it is the crew, or Paul and Mary in my case, and things.
Yeah.
So the back was quite nice. Middle was quite nice. Didn't like the front.
No. Feels very exposed.
Ooh.
Yeah, not because I wanted to cheat, because I'm not that sort of person.
And you get the feeling if you're at the front, everybody else is talking about you behind.
Oh, no, I'm far too self-involved for that.
And another part of this question here from Cindy. The order in which you're called up for the showstopper, how do they determine that order? Is it a case of you're called up in the order that your benches is, and then it's edited in the edit to sort of heighten the suspense? Because we often get quite nice, especially in the beginning, you get the nice ones, the nice ones, the nice ones, the really nice ones, and then the not so good ones in the edit. That's usually the way the edit goes. So did you notice what order you were called up for the showstopper?
In my season, they always went in a circle.
It's never occurred to me that the edit is different from the order we went up. I couldn't remember it that well. But when you're in the tent, they seem to go either clockwise around the benches or anti-clockwise. So they didn't pick one from one side and then one from the middle of the other and then dot about. They actually followed it round.
Yeah, same as they just went in a circle. And the thing is, they picked someone, and then when they went to the second person, you knew which way the circle was going, and then you knew when you were going to be judged. Like they never sort of told us. They just went, but they always went in a circle.
Mm. Lovely. Well, excellent. Thank you, Cindy, for those questions. And we have some more questions here from Peter from Washington State. Hello, Peter. Peter says, "Dear Sarah, Jane, Howard and Dan, loving the podcast. Here is my question. At the end of the episode, before the hosts announce who is star baker and who is leaving, we see all the bakers sitting on their stools in a row. Does the director or someone from the show tell you where to sit? I often wonder because it seems like the star baker and the departing baker for that week are often sitting next to or near each other. And I wonder if this is intentional on the production team or whether you all just sit where you like."
I just sat where I liked. I just sat next to...
And I didn't care what anybody said.
No, I typically, because I like a bit of extra legroom, I always would try to sit on one of the two ends because I don't like to be squished in and the stools have to be tightly packed. So I would just make a beeline for one of the end seats. That's what I always did.
Okay.
In real life, I'm very antisocial.
I think you get the freedom to sit where you want, but occasionally someone might say, can you move there? Because, I don't know, you've got all the guys together or something like that to mix it up a little bit. You know, if you've not, right. or you've got colours that are all kind of clashing at one end or something like that. So you do sit where you want, but you occasionally get moved, I think.
Yeah, exactly as Howard said. But the only time that you're asked not to sit behind your photo.
Oh, did they say that?
Try not to sit behind your photo, because then I assume if I was Paul, I'd look up and see me going, oh my goodness. Whereas if you're not directly in line, then it's not quite so obvious.
Yeah, you don't want to be directly in the eye line, do they?
No. Because then if you're judging yours, because you're supposed to keep a poker face, as we've all seen watching it, you never do. Keep a poker face, no.
Never.
It must be really hard.
But also, in the early weeks, we would try and look, because there's only, I think from memory, there's about 4 or 5 cameras at the front. So in the early weeks, you could look at who the camera was pointed at to try and work out. We all knew who'd done the best and who'd done the worst, because we were all there the whole weekend. But you could kind of see, but we already knew already, but you could see, you know, the 2 cameras pointing at the 2 people who did the worst, 2 cameras pointing at the 2 people who did the best. And you were like, okay, I'm not involved in this. I will not be in this shot, you know, because I wasn't the best and I wasn't the worst. So, but towards the end, there's enough cameras to look at everyone, so you don't know.
Oh, you were much more aware than I was.
Yeah, I'd not noticed that. Yeah. No,
Dan's always aware when there are cameras on him. I'm always aware. Well, thank you very much, Peter, for that question. And we're going to have a third question.
Ooh.
I know. We're going a bit crazy on the last episode of the series. So this is from Mario and Dubi from Croatia.
Ooh.
So fantastic that we're reaching people all the way across Europe. So hello, Mario and Dubi from Croatia. They say, hello, bakers. Firstly, I have to say that my wife and I are big fans of your podcast. After having watched Bake Off for a few years, it was a joy to discover former bakers giving their commentary on the episodes. And as far as we're concerned, the podcast and the show go together. We wouldn't have one without the other.
Oh,
that's so sweet. Thank you so much, guys. Now the question for the signature and the showstopper rounds, the hosts first give a short description of what you need to make. However, how much more information is in the official brief that you were given beforehand? Are there some limits imposed on you that aren't apparent from watching the show? Thank you for the years of entertainment you've provided, and keep on baking.
Oh,
go on, Howard.
Lovely. Yes, go on, Howard.
Yeah, there are. So quite often it will be much more specific. And actually, the intro might be more specific, but in the edit, it'll be edited down a little bit. So they won't give every detail about all the things that we've had to cover in the brief, really.
I don't think we can be more specific than that, because we are still covered by our NDAs.
Are we?
Aren't we, Howard? I think it's for life. I don't think we talk for life. And we don't want to get told off again, Howard, do we?
No.
We have been told off once for giving too much away.
Dup, dup, dup.
I think they don't include every bit of detail of the brief in the show, just because that's not very interesting for the audience. But yeah, there are, you know, we have to run our recipes past the team, you know, and the team will go, are you sure this meets the brief or whatever? Some, you know, most of the time it does, but sometimes they'll be like, I'm not sure this is what we're looking for. And you're like, oh, okay, I'll do something different then. But yeah, it's there's definitely detail that is not shown, because it wouldn't be, that's not the most entertaining part of the episode, is that we want to see people crying over a cake. That's what we want to see.
That's very true. I mean, you can even see it in the edit that makes, well, that makes the final edit, because you say, especially in the showstoppers, we're just going to have, it was a tiered celebration cake, and then Paul said we're looking for a 3-tiered celebration cake, so even then they drop in little bits of information that we haven't heard the hosts just say. Lovely. Well, thank you very much, everybody, to Mario and Dubi, Peter and Cindy. Thank you so much, guys, for your questions, and everybody who sent in any questions and comments, thank you all so much. We love answering your questions and hearing all the lovely things you have to say about the podcast, which we love bringing to you. So thank you so much, everybody. Obviously, don't send in any more questions because we haven't got any more podcasts to do.
We'll answer next year. Yeah.
Yes, but if you do want to send in any questions that you think of now, we will store them up for next year. So you can still get in touch with us. You can send in your questions to thebakedown@bakewithalegend.com, or you can contact us on social media. We are at Bake With A Legend on all platforms. So now we move on to the final challenge of the final episode of Series 14 of Bake Off, the final showstopper. And as we've just mentioned, it was a three-tiered celebration cake inspired by the baker's very first bakes. This was a 4.5-hour bake. Yes, something inspired by what the first bake they ever made. And we had some lovely classic cakes. We had a lemon drizzle, we had a Victoria sponge, and then a chocolate cake / Victoria sponge. So some very, very classic bakes here. Howard, what did you think of this challenge?
I thought it was a lovely challenge. I'm glad you clarified, because at first I wasn't clear whether this was based on their very, very first bake ever or their first bake in the tent.
Mm. And, yeah, me too.
But yeah, it became clearer as we went through it. So yeah, lovely challenge. Opportunity to do some really nice decoration and some classic bakes with lovely flavours as well.
They're all a bunch of liars, though. They all should have just made a Victoria sponge. We all know that's what they really started with. Come on, get real.
That's a bit harsh, bunch of liars. They're just sort of being a little bit creative with their choices, I think. Because who remembers, especially when you get to my age, who remembers what my first bake was? I really don't remember it at all.
Chocolate cornflake cakes.
Probably.
That was my
favorite. That would have been yes. The most beautiful chocolate cornflake.
Or an illusion cake. Yeah. Illusion cake in the shape of a giant cornflake. You could have done anything there. So yes, we had some lovely classic flavours. Dan threw all the lemon at his with a lemon curd, limoncello creme mousse, a raspberry compote in there, Italian meringue topping, white chocolate collar, lemon macarons. three white chocolate collars and lemon macarons as well as the cake. I mean, Dan's been criticised for going too much for it and not being able to finish. And I think that happened again this time.
Yeah.
I think where he went wrong was making the macarons. Mm. And I remember Paul ripping somebody to shreds, and I can't remember who it was, for making dodgy macarons. And I thought what might have been nicer was to do some draw on or do it with chocolate, some lemons, and then put the background white collar on it. So it was actually lemons were part of the collar, or even doing yellow dots on the collar, so he didn't need to make the macarons, because they take ages, don't they, by the time you've let them dry, and then you've got to make them bake long enough and all that.
Yeah.
So I think it fell down in the planning, really. And I don't know what it is like now, but for us, it was only the semi-finalists that found out what the brief was for the final. So you really don't get much time to even think about it.
Yeah.
But I would have thought they would have enough in sort of their repertoire to be able to come up with a three-tier cake, because it wasn't a complicated brief, really. A lovely brief, and we all wanted to see something beautiful, a real showstopper. And I think they all just fell short for me this time, sadly. But I think Dan just took on too much, dropped the macarons and make everything else lovely.
As someone who flatters myself that I'm a bit of a specialist at making macaron, I thought those were rather disappointing. But I think it was also very harsh of Paul to say, you shouldn't have put them on, it ruined it. Because even if that was kind of true, it's an incredibly rude thing to say. I don't know. I mean, I know it's a final of a contest, but I was like, wow, that's really harsh, Paul. I didn't like that. But I think he underbaked them. I think so. When he piped them, it looked like the mixture looked nice and thick. It didn't look like it was too thin, which is normally what makes the feet spread like that. So I would imagine his oven was too hot. That's usually the other thing that causes that to happen. But then he had why would he do that? I don't know. Mm. I don't quite understand.
His collar's cracked as well, and his collars were short.
He had to patch it.
And the thing is with a collar, and everybody's going to be laughing because I had failures with collars in the tent, you don't really want to temper the chocolate for a chocolate collar.
No.
Because they will crack. And when you cut it, they then shatter. So you want almost untempered chocolate for a collar. And I think he probably tempered it. You know, timing has to be perfect to get a chocolate collar on, especially a white chocolate collar. Yeah, I just think he had a bit of a horrible day in the tent, bless him.
Yeah, it was... didn't go quite as well as he'd hoped. He was also very disappointed with his macarons, but it was nice that he got to taste them and talk to the judges in that moment and go, oh yes, I think they were underbaked. We don't know what happened there.
I loved his comment though at the judging when he said, work to be done for next week though.
So, yes. Like, optimistic. That's a
yeah.
Wouldn't it be great if he turned back up at the tent like the next week just with some better macarons? Like, the tent's not there. I did it!
Well, the tent's always there, Sarah. The tent's always there.
Always there.
I think it's there year round at this point. I don't think they take it down anymore.
Really? No, right. Because the grass still grows in the tent.
Does it?
You know, they don't want to leave that great big tent up there. They only use it for, I don't know, maybe 12, 14 weeks a year. You don't want a big tent in your garden, do you? But they do take it down.
Garden? It's an estate, Jane.
It's just an estate. It's still their garden, isn't it?
Well, let's move on to Matty's cake. He made a chocolate-inspired cake, but also with a Victoria sponge in there as well. He did a chocolate Genoese. Which, again, he said as well, was quite a brave choice for the bottom of a cake to support everything. Mm. But that didn't seem to be a problem. He did a chocolate French buttercream with brownie crumbly pieces. And then his Victoria sponge was lemon and rosemary with a summer fruit jam. And I don't think Prue could have said enough nice things about his cake. Apart from the lean, they really liked the colours and the decoration. The sponge was light. Excellent cake, Moorish, I believe they said as well. Excellent Victoria sponge and jam, and all the flavours were perfect. So I think to eat, that was one of definitely Prue's favourites, if not both of their favourites. What did we think of that one?
So why did I write middle tier was underbaked? Did he trim it off and then stick it back in the oven? Am I misremembering that? But I've written...
In the challenge, yes, he took his cakes out of the oven and he said, oh gosh, well, the voiceover said they were underbaked. So yes, I don't know what happened there. I don't know if he made another one
back in because
does that work?
I didn't know you could do that. I didn't know. Well,
maybe you brought it in from M&S.
Maybe.
I mean, I think it's written. Wow, one light sponge. Somebody said he made French buttercream, which is one of my favourites. We've talked about before. You use egg yolks. But you just don't get much of it, which so I love a French buttercream. Good old Matty for that one. But the idea of putting a crumbled brownie in the filling just made me go, why?
I think it was a link, wasn't it? He was arguing that one of his first bakes was chocolate brownies, so he wanted to kind of get chocolate rather than transforming it just into a Genoese. He wanted brownies in there.
One thing that rubbed me up the wrong way, though, and I don't know why, but it really upset me, was that Matty said that he made brownies and brought them in and told everyone that his girlfriend had made them. Like, what? What's that about? Why would you be...
I'm going to jump in on Matty's defence here. I think being a young man, being a young sporty man, being a young sporty straight man, there is a lot of stigma around baking. It's very effeminate, which is of course complete nonsense.
I think there is.
Not gay. So, look at me and Howard.
And especially working in a school, I definitely appreciate there would have been kids who might have really teased him for it. And if he's not been very secure and very confident about it, as his fiancée did seem to give the impression that he wasn't very secure about his baking ability, then it's a way to test out your bakes without getting all the ribbing for it. And I don't know.
It seemed a shame for me in this day and age that he felt the need that he couldn't.
Well, they're all going to find out now.
Well, they are. They are now. And may I say that Lara seems absolutely lovely.
She is darling.
I think they're very sweet together. I think, I like them as a couple. I think they're lovely.
Yeah.
Right. So then there's Josh's. Now, Josh had a really, really good day before with his signature and his technical, and he wanted to do a take on a Victoria sponge with all the flavours being inspired by his garden and the seasons, which is something that's featured very prominently in his bakes. So Howard, this kind of was a bit like his very first cake and almost like his first bake-off cake. So he's kind of put the two together.
Yeah.
He had a little shortbread greenhouse on top of his cake, and then all the other flavours, there was a rhubarb and strawberry jam, there was a lemon curd in there, and there was some grated apple and all sorts of different flavours. I'm sure I've missed some. The comments were the greenhouse looks really good, and that was very neat. The colours were nice as well, but they wanted the piping work to be neater, but it was very level. The jam was very good, and the sponge was good with the apple in it, but the apple couldn't really be tasted, and the bottom layer was a bit heavy and a bit underbaked. And Paul then said,
"Oh, I didn't get underbaked. I'm compressed. I didn't say. Oh, okay. Was it underbaked as well?
I think I heard that word, but maybe not." And Paul said, "It's not boring, but it's on the way to being boring," which just felt like such a slap in the face.
They had some horrible comments. Because
Josh's showstoppers have been anything but boring.
I also thought the criticism of the decoration was almost a bit unfair as well, because it wasn't the most dazzling decoration you've ever seen, but it wasn't terrible.
No.
It was more work than Matty's, I felt. I mean, Matty's was pretty, but Josh's was more work, I would have thought. No?
We didn't talk about Matty's decoration, did we?
No, we didn't.
And I thought it was
fine.
What you might do if you weren't particularly good at decorating, but it did look incredible.
Matty said that himself.
Yeah,
Matty did say that himself.
He did.
And it's a very effective way of decorating a cake to do that if you're not particularly confident. But it looked his looked so wonky, whereas Josh's didn't. I thought they were so harsh. They said his flavours were adequate. Adequate. God, talk about damning with faint praise. I thought they were really cruel to Josh.
I didn't understand the judging at all on this. I thought it was just weird. They focused on the little greenhouse was like sugar biscuits, and he'd melted some mints.
Yes.
And they were saying, "Oh, you can really taste the mint." Well, of course you would. They're melted mints. Yeah. Bizarre.
It's decoration. Yeah.
And I've never heard the term pipe work other than in plumbing before. I mean, like you said, Sarah, a couple of minutes ago, piping work, yeah. But pipe work, the pipe work is not very neat. Well, get a plumber in.
Yeah. Paul also said, I want to see more of your journey in the tent.
What does that mean?
He started off really well. He continued really well. And I thought he did a very nice job for the final. I mean, there's a lot of cakes to bake in 4.5 hours to get them cooled and decorated. 4.5 hours, as Alison said, ample. The time was ample. It really isn't to do three tiers.
That side eye he gave her. What are you talking about?
Yeah. But, what journey? What was he going to turn it into? I mean, I thought he did really well to get three layers stacked nicely and looking pretty. If you want them to be more highly finished, give them more time for it. I thought they were really harsh on Josh.
Yeah.
Really, really harsh. I would have been very upset with all those comments.
But what was so nice is after the challenge, they all do the little talking heads outside, and I guess they ask him, so like, how do you feel that went? And Josh was really proud of himself. He said, this is what I've put into it. I've set my bar and I've achieved it. And he was proud of himself, which is nice. It's nice that they've grown into people who can trust their own ability. Hmm. Obviously, you're going to get feedback and you're going to learn from Paul and Prue and what they say. But it was so nice for him to say, yes, I've done well. That's what I wanted to do. I've done it. And by my standards, that's great. And the confidence in his own ability was really sweet to see. Mm. So
it is. Nice. And I will say, after going through, I mean, I didn't even make it through 10 weeks, but after going through 10 weeks of Bake Off, you're sort of exhausted and emotional. And for him to be so sort of measured and positive and reflective so quickly about his experience, I thought was genuinely lovely, because if it were me, I'd have been kind of like, oh no, I messed it all up at the end, you know. And it was nice to see that he had some perspective already. And, you know, we've all been in the tent where we've had things criticised and we've thought, well, actually, I quite liked what I did, you know, and maybe we're not as collected as to express it eloquently like Josh did. But, that's nice for him, and I'm glad that we got to see that.
So can I just jump in here before we talk about who won and just go back to where we chose who was going to be in the final?
Yes, please do. Let's reveal this.
I found my notes.
Yes.
So me... I'm going to start with me first. Okay. I chose Dan, Tasha and Christy, with Dan as the winner.
Yeah.
So clearly I only got one person in the final. Howard had Dan, Tasha and Abby, with Abby winning.
Oh.
So again, sort of both of us were sort of only got one. And Dan, ugh, I hate to say it, you picked... Dan, Josh and Tasha, so you had two people in the final and you picked Josh as the winner.
I did. So but Dan, none of us picked, well, none of us picked Matty though.
No,
so
no. Matty's
we
been
all
a dark
owe Matty
horse,
a big apology, don't we? Because we underestimated him most horribly. So if you ever listen to this, Matty, we're so sorry that we judged you so harshly and you did a wonderful job on the Bake Off.
Well, perhaps we saw his journey in the tent, because he definitely improved as he went along, didn't he? And got
definitely
more confident. Yeah. So, well, I hate to say it. Well done, Dan, for picking two finalists.
Well done.
So. In fairness, we all chose Tasha, so we're all wrong. I'll take any victory I can get. Thank you, Jane.
Well done. Next year.
Next year.
Next year.
And so that brings us quite neatly to the final judgment. Now, we don't have anybody to send home, because after this, everybody's going home. So we just have to talk about the winner. Now, before we do that, just want to talk about the three finalists and how they've all got this lovely story. You're like, you know, when Nadia was on the Bake Off, everybody talked about, you know, her story and her progression. You know, she was unconfident and didn't do very well, often coming last in technicals, and then she just got so confident, up she went. So that was a nice story. Josh was like the strong and steady one, you know, like the tortoise in The Tortoise and the Hare. He was very quiet, just very strong and steady. Dan was a bit of a wild card, wasn't he? Because he did really well and went a bit crazy with some flavours, and sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't, but he was always very confident and bold. And then Matty was a bit like the underdog, you know, he started off maybe not being a particular favourite, but just learnt and sort of went off and made the final. So whoever wins was going to have a fantastic story, and they should all be really proud of themselves for getting to the final. And so the final winner was Matty. Bless him, he has had such an incredible journey. He's maybe not the favourite in the first few weeks, but he's listened, he's learned, he's applied himself. And that final cake, the judges said they could not get enough of it. So I think Prue said, there's no reason why I should have another bit, but I'm going to. So she absolutely loved that cake. And he's done so well. And so Matty for our winner. Howard, how do we feel?
Well, on some levels, it's a bit of a surprise, isn't it? Because obviously Josh has done it again and sort of come in second place. And
so close.
I feel a bit sad. Matty's face, he was just so excited, wasn't he? Just thought before they announced the winner that, it, you know, he might have just done enough. And clearly he had. So well done. Well done, Matty.
A very satisfying result. I think it's nice to see the underdog come through, isn't it? And Matty, self-identified underdog of the Bake Off tent. Lovely for him and a lovely moment.
So let's hope he'll be proud enough to take his bakes into school now and own up.
Yeah.
Well done, Matty. I think that I love the Matty. Lovely, because he laughed all the way through it, didn't he? He never seemed floored by anything. He's just big smiley face the whole time, whole way through, which is a joy for us viewing. Well
for
done,
the audience.
Matty.
Yeah, lovely.
So Bake Off 2023 comes to an end, as does Series 7 of The Bake Down. Dan, Jane and Howard, thank you so much for joining me each week and for giving your lovely comments and criticisms. It's been absolutely fantastic and it's been an utter joy as always. And to all our lovely dear listeners, thank you so much for listening each week, for sending us questions, and of course, for joining our classes. And don't forget, you can join any of our upcoming classes. We have classes now running all the way through into February. So if you want to get some winter classes booked in after the new year to jolly yourself up after Christmas and the holidays, then please come and join us. And we look forward to seeing you at a class very soon. Dan, Howard and Jane, thank you so much, guys. And we will see you very soon for the Christmas episodes, which we are very much looking forward to bringing you. So until then, thanks, everybody. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye, bye. Guys. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Bye.
Bye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.